So James, with Melissa Meyer, there's a painter, if you're interested in process, where you really, I feel, in each work with Meyer, you've got the finished work and you've got the process all at once. Is that a fair way of thinking about her? That you really do feel you're almost there painting the painting as you're looking at it?
I didn't quite feel that way.
How did you feel?
Well, I came in really wanting to like this work. You know, this is the type of work I love. Lenin Weinberg, you know, has a great history of exhibiting some amazing structured color abstraction, and this certainly seems to fall in line with that. She built up her canvases by kind of dividing them up into a kind of grid of light wash, and then goes back in and does this kind of calligraphy or dance or however you want to write it, however you want to look at it, and it's a bit of a performance, and it's a virtuosic performance in many ways. But for me, most of the work seemed too regular in that the way that was occurring, too stiff, very decorative, and it needed, I think, the introduction of a kind of foreign element or agent to just make it a little more interesting. I saw that in a couple of paintings, but in others, it just seemed just way too flat for me.
Okay, right. Patricia, as somebody who has a particular interest in performance, I wonder if this is a painter that where you felt a the brush was performative, whether the calligraphy of the works and the made any particular sense to you, or how did you respond?
Yeah, I mean, we could stretch performance to mean a lot of different things. To me, that was not meaningful at all. But I did think also that, and I do like her paintings, but I did see how it could be a bit, yeah, flat and decorative. I mean, I agree with that. I just could see a lot of these works being picked out to match somebody's couch. And I felt like the reason that, I think other people, everyone saw the book show as well. I mean, that's what I really liked, that move to materials personally was that, I mean, not to talk about commodification, but the idea that it existed as this artist book was just, it sort of solved that problem for her, because it was the same kind of a thing that she was doing, she has a thing, you know, she was doing the same grid, but just in a way that made it so much more interesting and alive for me. So I thought it was interesting to see the two of them together, and again, to talk about those materials. But performative, no, I think anything can be called that in a way.
Yeah, fair point. Although, to me, that's actually the essence of what is going on with Meyer. I mean, I think that almost any great abstract painter is going to come up against the possibility of A, being decorative, and B, being flat, because you know, they're within a discourse that is striving and making central use of those two elements. I mean, if you don't know jazz and you just hear it, you say, well, this is nice music, but it's the kind of music you could have going on in a bar or something. And, well, the truth is, yes, that's because they play jazz in bars, but it's still Charlie Parker. You know, so, Peter, would you back me up on that?
You talk yourself into a hole and then you want me to pull you out of it. No, I think it's there. The funny thing about, I would probably, to cut to the chase, I would probably come down mildly on a negative side, the negative side being a bit of a disappointment, because I've seen a lot of her shows and I know the work. And she does one thing all the time that's really pretty good. I think it's an old Hans Hofmann dictum that in nature, light creates the color, and in painting, color creates the light. And she somehow gets the sum of the light coming off the canvases is more than equal to the sum of its parts. There's a kind of a glow there, if you want. And I can parse it a little bit. I see, I mean, she's very, when she puts those little yellow patches in, you know, there's some, you know, she works that very nicely. But what it did with me was the arguing with myself as I looked at it. You know, not so much in words because they weren't stories. I could see yes, they're kind of the same kind of brush mark, and they're in a little brick-like unit like this, and that's going to be bad, and that she's, you know, repeating the same thing. And then I would look again, and I would say, well, wait a minute, though. There's an interesting color. This one's got brown and pink in it. There's one with, I think, pink in it. And I went back and forth and back and forth, knowing things. And I came down with I'm sticking very close to the middle tonight, a kind of mild version of the Tyson thing, where I think she's a really good painter. I'm one of the people that thinks that Tyson is a, you know, kind of mid-major painter. But it's, you know, the shtick is too much in a groove. And James said a foreign element, and I don't think, you know, literally some assemblage thing on there. But something. But they're very good. But I went back and forth, and I came down slightly on that. You know, I was a little bit disappointed.
All right. Well, okay. I must say, I follow her work very closely. I should confess, I've written catalog essays for her, so I have that, you know, involvement, degree of involvement and investment, I suppose you'd say. But I can see that, yeah, there's a Melissa Meyer way of going about business. It's the grid, it's calligraphy, and it's color that goes with or against the grid. Perhaps it's a result of being so deep an admirer that I actually see significant shifts from show to show, and felt that in this show she was really shifting gear, in particular in the kind of rather heavy, strong, slightly difficult marks that were pushing right against the grid and were almost like skeletal figures that they built up into kind of skeletal figures in one or two of them, and were very much like a sort of heavy filigree, like you'd have in a stained glass window, where you suddenly have the sculptural element of a really thick or bronze almost holding the panes together, and that seemed to be for me a departure. One thing I would say, though, is that, and I, you know, I want to take issue with the three co-panelists in my admiration. I feel if I could have taken that show to the Friedrich Petzel Gallery and for an afternoon, and asked Nicola if she didn't mind too much, fellow female artist and all that, and rehung just the three or four paintings at the back. It was a little bit of the Amy Cutler effect, the tchotchkes in the front. You know, Leonard Weinberg's a bit of a sort of corridor gallery, so it's a serious restriction. There's nothing worse for me than when you've got a painting show that has four magnificent statements, like you have in the paintings that one saw at the back, to have to get there through a corridor of works on paper and small works. I think that was a shame. And I think if it had been seen somewhat differently, that perhaps some of my panelists would feel differently about the show. But I'm not sure that there's much room for debate. I mean, it's just we've all said what we think, and unless we have 5 or 10 minutes of saying, how could you think what you think when I think what I think? It's unfortunately possibly one of those situations where the premise of the review panel, beloved by so many, lovely to see a full house, lovely to have great guests, but sometimes the premise just isn't actually there. If there's just people have had their say and they say what they think, we might have done it.
Well, maybe I'll try to add a little bit here.
Yes.
I mean, you know, one question I was asking myself, what would I like to see different? What would I like to see these paintings do?
Yeah, the foreign element.
Yeah.
Could you?
Well, there was one painting there called Walkabout that seemed to have a red number one in the middle of it. I like
yes.
it right there. You know, calligraphy, writing, the introduction of maybe letters or things that are more visible and playing off that, I just feel like the work could operate on an additional level that would add some more visual interest to it. And it almost like a, you know, it's like, right now it's like a code that it doesn't really say anything. you know, but if there was maybe something there that you could try to get at, I think that could be very attractive.
Well, I mean, the essence of abstraction, in a way, is the Kantian dictum of purposiveness without purpose. So that with Maya, it's the calligraphy-like, but without any actual calligraphy. But I totally buy your argument that that a painting can still be abstract, as Jasper Johns, of course, has shown, perhaps, that a painting can still be abstract and yet adopt a very legible and recognizable figure or form. Maybe then, if you saw some actual numbers, so you'd like to you feel that there was an actual number, a bit like a.
I'm not saying put a number in it.
Mars and Hartley. Come in number five. You know,
just something. That's up to her, but just something else in there. Just the calligraphy, it just doesn't say anything to me right now. That's the problem.
For me, the book did that. I mean, mm-hmm. that solved that problem for me. But
yes, the book. I'm sorry, we forgot to get a picture of the book, which is a show we are wanting to think about and talk about as well.
Probably the thing, the tenor of the discussion, which ended in what David hates most is dead air. is the fact that everybody up here buys the premise. I mean, with Nicola Tyson and Amy Cutler, there was a little bit, you know, I said I didn't like this kind of twee surrealism. There was a genre debate, as it were. There's a thing about Tyson and whether you like the monstrification of something and like that. In here, everybody is accepting, as I think we should be, of Melissa Meyer's premise, and so we're sitting here feinschmecking over whether the calligraphy is this or that, or whether there could be more color, which probably makes for a dull discussion. You know, it's kind of a discussion among connoisseurs of who would like it a little bit this way and a little bit that way.
Well, is there then a painter of? Let's define exactly what Melissa Meyer is. She's a painter of. Flat, decorative, quilt-like grids, in which calligraphy is an animating element that gives a kind of speed and velocity to the color, and the color, as Peter absolutely accurately pinpoints it, is effulgent. It's a color that pronounces and promotes and a particular kind of light.
Why didn't you give me effulgent before I spoke?
Okay.
I could have used that.
All right. But didn't any of your students at NYU use that word? I mean, you weren't reading carefully. You should have taken some notes. So is there somebody when we looked at Tyson, we just say, okay, Yuskovich. Isn't Yuskovich doing Tyson in a more sexy way? So with Melissa Meyer, is there a contemporary painter that uses effulgent light, the grid, and calligraphy in a more enticing way that we can think of?
I can't.
Or where she... You know, the funny thing is, she works... I mentioned jazz, and she actually sometimes mentions jazz and saying that she feels she's like a jazz musician in respect to the fact that it's become a genre of its own. And that to those who've gone on to hip-hop, for instance, jazz is old hat because it's jazz. But that to those who follow jazz is a living language and it never expires and it always has room within it for reinvention. So in a way, do we accept, for instance, that argument that abstraction is a bit like that? And if so, is it just a cordoned-off thing in itself, which has its own internal dynamics, or is there a sense of the urgency? Can one reactivate that sort of urgency that existed for abstraction in the 40s and 50s, where it really was in the driving seat, so what the abstract painter did next was what painting was going to do next? I mean, is it possible to say abstraction needs to go in the direction of Stephen Westphal, or in the direction of Melissa Meyer, or in the direction of Juan Housley, or in the direction of Howard Hodgkin, and it's, any one of those artists shows what's lackluster about the others?
I think it needs to go in the direction of Stephen Westphal, if you're going to say that. I mean, I think his shows at that same gallery are knockouts. And he's also, I mean, he's not doing the same thing, but he's also using color. But there's just something so unusual about the way he uses color and the way it's animated. And also, and more recently, how he's been studying mosaic and bringing that in, that discussion into a kind of modernist language. You know, if this is jazz, it's a little more like easy listening.
Okay. I think Lennon, I think Westfall is hard edge, and he brings in pop. And but then it sounds like that's what you want. You want that otherness in your
abstraction. Well, I think also I'm just going to say, you know, I always see paint. One risk, I think, when you're an abstract painter especially, is getting just a little too good at what you do.
All right.
And then, you know, I think the best move is sometimes to, you know, push the reset button and just try a different approach.
Right. Like Modigliani trying to work with his left hand.
When I was in Chelsea to re-see, I had seen Cutler's show and Tyson's show before, and I took a second look. I was walking up 10th Avenue past this rather schlocky gallery with a glass front that has Warhols and Art Warhols and Lichtensteins and Art Lichtensteins, and there was this painting that caught my eye, and it was maybe a little bit bigger than those boys playing soccer over there, you know, one of those, horizontal. And I think it was a two-part, and it was, I said, you know, can this be in this sort of schlocky gallery? And by God, it was a small 1974 Norman Bloom, a painter whom a lot of people don't like and didn't like. I always rather liked it. And I went in there to look at it, being a little bit embarrassed to go into this gallery. And it had some oomph, and I had just come from Melissa Meyer's show, and I can't quite explain it, but there was, you know, maybe it was just the contrast of it, but there was a kind of slightly wham-bam, I'm going to take a chance. It was a smallish painting. It wasn't a big risk, you know, that something's going to fall. And Melissa Meyer, except for the fact that she can't, the way she paints, I don't think she can go back over. You know, she doesn't have opaque paint. And so she's out there working without a net, so to speak. I wish she would take a little chance. That was a long statement that didn't...
No, thank you for it. No apologies required. Great. All right. Peter, the last show we've seen together is Michelle Lopez on the Lower East Side. Sorry to force you to go to a different neighborhood. But look to me, when I was... The first body of work one sees, it looks as if somebody... putting together a McCracken show had employed John Chamberlain as the art handler. Now you're an expert for us on Californian cool abstraction. You've written a book, I believe, on the art of California.
Long ago discredited.
Long ago and a revered standard authority on the subject. She's playing a little with our expectations and memories of certain artists, isn't she?
Yeah, but see, I really like not this show, but the kind of the planks, okay? And the odd thing is, she gives the least works in the show to me. The vertical strips that were hanging, they have a title called Flare, and according to the press release, it was taken from a title of a McCracken plank. I haven't seen her work for a long time. I mean, I've seen it interveningly. I did see that leather car that she did in the original, you know, Greater New York. But, see, I'm happy if I go to a show and I'm not going to judge it as the show. She should have put this in, put that out. I thought the installation was fairly right on for what was in the show. It was very astutely done. And I go, the big things were the best things, then those puns on skateboards and melty plywood were the second things, and I thought the hanging strip things were negligible. Don't ask me to, you know, defend all those judgments. But the planks had a presence to them, and even though, and this is an old trick I used to do, David, all the time, I'd say it's halfway between somebody and somebody. I just got a catalog from some figurative painter, and I said, you know, it's halfway between Aang and Walter Keane. And you can do that, and you can kind of dismiss something easily like that. And I see McCracken and the Chamberlain-ish things. But I just thought they had a presence to them, and if you want to go, you know, psychological, and here I'm way out of my depths, I thought she had the phallic and the vaginal in the same piece. These are these, you know, things that go up in the air, but then you got to go around and look and see what the color is in, you know, inside. And they were mystifying, and one of them was where I thought it was a like New York Yankee blue, that real dark, you know, and it was turned out to be black. I had to ask, and they told me, so.
No, I certainly wasn't seeking.
Anyway, I like those, the big things. I thought those were the best works of art I saw in the tour of four shows.
Right. Now, I certainly was not seeking to dismiss this work. I thought it had a sexiness and panache to it, and I enjoyed it. And then when I learned more about the premises behind it, although I have trouble with work where you need the conceptual narrative to get it, it actually did make it richer for me. Patricia, what's the most lasting thing for you with this show? Was it that first visual impact of those forms, or was it the conceptual underpinnings of the show?
Well, I mean, I think it brings together for me a lot of the things we've been talking about already tonight. Similarly to Nicola Tyson, I think she's engaging with this very macho art history and kind of, I don't think the work is feminine per se, but just really, I think she makes those, she crinkles them up by like rolling around on them, and so she has these sort of interesting processes that go along with it. And yeah, I found it incredibly engaging work, and a lot more pared down than her last show at that gallery a couple years ago, which I also really enjoyed. I think she's a good artist. I wasn't so engaged by the back room, by the skateboards, or the sticks were confusing to me as to why they should be why they would be interesting. I couldn't really engage with them, but I liked the idea of the leaning, that everything was leaning against the wall, so it was like very strong, but also kind of needed to be supported. There was a lot that was going on, and for such a small amount of material. I mean, they were big, but there wasn't a lot that seemed to be going on. And yet, at the same time, there's a lot to think about. So,
process, James. There's a lot of rather meticulous, and certainly I was impressed by the rigor and depth of her color and paint choice researches. Did that register with you, or was that a distraction? How did that work with you?
Well, for one thing, with the skateboard pieces, I was impressed by how well those were made. I mean, to make the plywood bend in the way it does, I mean, to a liquid almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a surrealist work. You know, that's like the melting clock, but it's your melting skateboard. I thought there was something very appealing about the grip tape on the front of it, you know, which is supposed to be grip. You're supposed to, it's the solid platform, but here it is melting underneath you. It's very disconcerting. The of the monoliths, which would look a little bit like someone backed a truck into the prop room at 2001, you know. I thought that the black and white monolith was more successful than the silver ones, because when the silver ones just looked to me like mangled pieces of aluminum. The surface didn't change for me. I thought the black and white ones, the colors there became, it looked like paper for one thing. The exterior of the white one really looked like crinkled paper. And it was amazing to have a hard material like that looking so delicate. Looking at it then to the inside where it was black, because it was so black, the void became a form in itself and a line that kind of changed as you moved around it in a way that the blue inside the silver ones, you could see, there was more light penetrating in there, so it didn't become quite that void.
Right. Yes, I gathered, and I learning it made me enjoy the form more, that the crinkle effect was actually achieved by the artist rolling her own body, almost like an Eve Klein anthropophagy, against the metal to get that form. Of course, one doesn't. It's one of those cases where you're told it and it's interesting, and then you try to fold that interesting thing you've been told into the visual experience that would never have had that were you not told it. But then life is complex, so that happens. So why not just go with the flow and say, yes, it looks good and it feels good as well. Did the process register with you, Patricia?
Yeah, definitely. That in particular, for some reason, I really grabbed onto that. I just think it's kind of charming, and also it goes along very well with what she's trying to convey, and it seems very intentional. It's probably not the only way that one can crinkle a piece of aluminum,
yes.
So I think she probably does that and wants you to know about it. And
you need to know about it.
Which
yes.
makes it, in a way, a part of the work.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be outside of it.
I didn't know about it.
Ah.
How'd you find out about that?
Oh, well, I got a guided tour. In fact, there's a fascinating guiding tour in which my assistants and I were told we have to look at those melting walking sticks, that if you look at them head on, they all look like they're kind of one color, as I was told. I always hate it when labels or somebody giving a guided tour tells you what emotional or physical reaction you're going to have. But it makes you feel like a sort of five-year-old. I can't. Yes, okay, yes, I can see it now, thank you. But apparently, looking at it head on, they're all kind of the same color, but you look at it on the side, and they're very different colors. And I said, well, it's the way you've lit it. But that wasn't apparently the correct response or thing to say.
Because, I mean, it wasn't immediately apparent to me that she formed those crinkles by rolling around on it. It wasn't like there was an impression of a body on it or anything.
So no.
I think it works fine without knowing that.
It does. But we know it.
Now we know. Now I know. Now I know.
Therefore...
I mean, I will say also, I think this work... We haven't talked about architecture, but it's what she's doing is similar to what we see in architecture. I mean, taking the modernist form and bending it the way Frank Gehry would do. I mean, it's a similar process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's even a similar working process. You know, Gehry takes those, you know,
exactly,
insides right. of cylinders inside paper towel rolls and toilet paper rolls and plaster and bends them and twists them and does like that. I didn't know that at first either, and I was just struck by the presence. I like James's differing between the blue and silver ones and the black and white ones. I had a little bit of trouble, that's too strong a word, you know, a doubt about the skateboard ones, skateboardish ones. We can fall into these easy ways of describing, you know, somebody says skateboard, and then skateboard. But there was something about the surrealism, the Magritte-ness, if you will, of those things that bothered me a little because I couldn't look at them quite, you know, formally enough. That there was the grain in the wood, and I knew it was like, and it was the grip tape, and you know what I mean? It was like a melted skateboard. Whereas, except for the architectural reference or vibe, you know, with the columns, I didn't have any of that. I didn't, you know, it wasn't even remotely figurative of anything, and so I could look at it a little bit more, just you know, visually.
Yeah,
but you're right. We can't unknow now that she, you know. I mean, I had a sculpture class once when I was an undergraduate, taught by a guy whose specialty was welded aluminum sculpture. And the thing I think when somebody tells me something is aluminum, I was welding on it down here, and it was about 5 feet long, and I went down to the other end, and I was going to pick it up. Well, aluminum conducts heat, you know, mm-hmm. And it was, Jesus, you know, and my hands burned. And every time I confront something that's made out of aluminum, I think about it as this notoriously heat-conducting metal, which steel isn't. Irrelevant, but...
So we're just having a merely picturesque effect, and it has a sublime sense of terror for you that you could.
Yeah.
You just, your hands begin to sweat a little as you look at this. Oh my God, it's aluminum.
Yeah, early formative experiences.
Yes, of course.
Scar your perception.
Yes, yes.
Can I speak a little also about the scale in the show?
Yeah.
What's interesting is that you have very large works coming in, and then they just get very small. Those skateboard pieces are very tiny. There's something a little pathetic about them. In a good way.
They're not that tiny. They're waist high and then down, yes.
Well, they're pretty small. They're on the floor. I mean, you know, they're not monumental. any stretch of the imagination.
No, and they went up and then they go, oh.
No, exactly, yeah. I like that about the show.
They seem smaller because you've already seen the
That's
other
right.
ones.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want a monumental skateboard. It would escape you at the wrong moment. Let's have our audience comment on the last two shows we have talked about. But let's really try to start with Melissa Meyer, if we can cast our mind back to that. Because it was a largely negative, not overwhelmingly, but I'd say the average probably gave the show 45%, which is not too great a pass rate. And as somebody who does like this work a lot, I wonder if there's anyone in the audience who wants to challenge some of the premises of the panel about Melissa Meyer's paintings, or back it up. We're open to all. Any comments on the Melissa Meyer show? Hi.
Can we see the images again?
I'm sorry?
Can we see the images again?
Yes, yes. I think that's doable. Why not? Molly, can we... you may need to... okay. Nope. Actually, go to view at the top. Go to view at the top. Yeah, and then go to a slideshow. Yeah. And now go to the bottom left corner and click the arrow, and it says go to slide. And I would guess, there we are, Melissa Meyer, 27. Good, thank you. And here we go. But let's look and talk. So they're coming up. Oops. Yeah, they're coming up for us, but don't hold that thought. So, the lady who can we get the mic to the lady here, please? Third row back.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to the first time that decorative was mentioned was in regard to Melissa Meyer's paintings as being. You could imagine them being put above a couch. And I found Nicola Tyson's work incredibly decorative in kind of the mannered madness that Mr. Pinero had sort of talked about a little bit. And I just pictured like Lower East Side slick new condo couches underneath like all those paintings. So I'd just like to hear more about that. Thanks.
Fantastic. Great. Okay, thank you. Other comments on Meyer? Yes, the back row.
This is a very simple, obvious one often raised in relation to abstract painting, but the titles, of course, are highly descriptive of either characters or places or scenes, the Melissa Meyer titles I'm referring to. So I'm just wondering if anybody on the panel wanted to comment on the specificity of the titles for the Melissa Meyer paintings.
Yes, Melissa Meyer's titles always have a kind of cinematic or musical or historical or personal in contrast to, say, Tom Noskowski, who gives them number letter codes. But here's an artist who eschews the untitled cop-out for abstract painting. Yes, gentleman at the back.
Well, I was wondering when you were talking about Meyer's abstract work, like the older work wasn't so calligraphy or whatever, but the dark lines, and then but yet her color was like a Hans Hofmann painting, and it kind of brought out the light. And now she's moved into more a darker line to go around that same effect. And I started thinking about maybe there's sort of a dead end to abstract painting that we're really talking about when you said you really didn't have so much to say about it. And you've got that down, which is a beautiful effect. But where does it go from there? Any comments on that?
Well, I wouldn't say that, there's... dead end to abstract painting as a you know, as a genre. If there is, I'm in big trouble. But there is a kind of, you know, uniformity, semi-uniformity in Melissa Meyer's work that was apparent here, and a couple of people have said, maybe all of us have said, that, you know, it needs to get off the schneid in a certain way. We don't know what that is, because one of the things critics don't do, or they shouldn't do, is tell artists what to do to make their work better. That's crit time in art school.
Yeah, unless you're Roberta Smith. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I would resist the characterization that because a painter can marshal enormous skill and effect around one way of doing something, that means it's a sort of a closed book. I mean, because it's a question of the emotional content that the artist achieves in each individual work. So I of course there's a certain kind of energy in any kind of art making where if a person is struggling either intellectually or formally to get somewhere, that the struggle itself animates the work and makes it feel exciting and you go along with it. And certainly de Kooning is probably the greatest modern exemplar of that, and constantly refusing to settle into a form or a style or a manner precisely in order to keep alive that ongoing struggle. But then there are many artists who achieve great results without needing to dramatize their own struggle. And, you know, I think probably Melissa Meyer's an artist in the mold of someone like Alex Katz, who, for whom the performance, the bravura performance of something that is flat and simple and to some extent schematic, but married with incredible subtleties of color and form, is what makes the work for me so lively.
Well, let me just say, we said the average is 45%. I like her work. You know, I'm being particularly harsh, I guess, because I think she can even do more with what her capabilities are.
Right.
You know, she sets the stage with the grid. She then does her performance across it. She can take more risks, maybe, with the setting of that stage and going across the canvas in a new way.
Right. Okay.
Well, the thought occurred to me, and I'm just throwing this out. I haven't, you know, weighed it and filtered it. But it's difficult for an artist to be obsessive and lighthearted at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the thing. She borders on an obsessiveness. I've got to do it this way. I've got to do it, you know, the grids and so forth, and I keep going. But there's a certain joy. You know, those colors they have a fragrance to them. They're bright. There's a light that comes off the paintings. And it's hard to marry those two things. If she were, you know, doing dark, you know, gray on gray on gray, mm-hmm. everybody would think this was sort of, you know, boy, profound. But it's hard to do this.
Yes. You know, and I think I want to get back, for one thing, to the book. We haven't really talked about the book. I mean, that seems like a direction that is a very interesting one to explore, and I'd love to see more of that. I thought the book was the most successful piece, interestingly, because the works on paper, I thought, at the main show, were some of the weakest pieces. Mm-hmm. But you move into a different medium, and suddenly it works. And I have to say, you know, you mentioned critics can't say what direction an artist should go in. I see no problem.
Sure.
I mean, it's not like, you know, we're National Geographic and we can't touch, you know, when the tiger is going to chase the poor animal and it's going to upset the ecosystem. Why not make some recommendations?
Do you have one then?
Well, I think I made them. I said, you know,
stir it up.
Stir it up. Get remove that initial grid and then see what happens. Mix up that initial grid and then dance around that and see how it goes.
There's something really beautiful about her doing the same thing over and over again, though, and I just, to me, in my mind, I just, because these works keep talking to each other, kind of see that there's something happening that's the same as Amy Cutler's women doing these tasks, and in a weird content way, I think a lot that the works do the same thing. Those two artists are kind of getting at the same issue on some level, so it makes me like them more.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just to draw an analogy with music, you have Paganini. He'll take one tune and give you 21 variations, and each one is a completely different piece of music. If you go back a couple of centuries before to, say, John Dowland taking one lament in Lacrimae, tiny fragmentary change from piece to piece. Now, to somebody who only really likes Paganini, they say, oh, my God, how boring, it's the same piece over and over again. But to someone who's in the Baroque and adores Dowland, or it's pre-Baroque, the Renaissance, and loves Dowland, they might think the Paganini variations are a little vulgar. So I just think we have to, with each artist, the artist deserves that we adjust our expectations to their own scale of variation. And I think within her own scale of variation, Melissa Myers, like, there's almost a paradigm shift in these works. And so to hear someone say, oh, well, she does one thing, she does it over and over again, that's nice, I like that. I find that disconcerting in relation to her work. I see some more hands up. Yes.
I was going to say something similar in that, just having seen Melissa do a presentation at the studio school, when you're in the mode of looking at her work, you see these radical changes over a period of the last 20 and 30 years. And I think David's point about each artist and looking at them, going into that world so that you can, in Melissa's case, kind of slow down and speed up at the same time. And that those are kind of the changes that I have seen over the years in her work, is that there are times when you go into a very quiet mode with her, and there are times when the action really picks up. And I think it is subtle, and I think that this is a hard thing about, the lovely thing about showing your work consistently in New York City is fabulous, and the hard thing about it is that expectation for change with every show, and what is our expectation for an artist's exploration.
Mm. Well, let me say, you know, I came into the show not comparing it to other shows. I know you have a long history looking at this. I read some of the essays you've written. Very good. I think there can be change even within the work, each work itself. You know, you have a pattern in the work going across, back down the other way. And to see more variation even within that, I think, would be more interesting to me. You have your theme, then you have your variation right there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Gentlemen there, you still want to mention? Yes.
I've seen a lot of her work over the years, and I had found this show to be very interesting because I think she was saying more with less in some of those paintings in the back. I did think those three paintings in the gallery were three of the more wonderful paintings I've ever seen of hers. I think that it does have depth, even though it's flat, and even though the abstraction is flat, I thought that the sense of the light emanating from the back with the grid on top was really beautiful, but was rendered very lightly in almost a joyful way in this show. And I think that is a progression since the last couple of shows. But I also wanted to make a point about how most human beings, I think, look at a work. They look at the work and they see what it's doing for you right then and there. And they don't look at it as a show. And I know you folks, as a critic, looking at how an artist is putting together his or her work over the last 2 years, might say, this is working, or this is all the same. And what's interesting is when you see these artists and talk to them, you realize how hard they're working on that particular work. And if you look at each one separately, if you look at the piece, for example, of Melissa's at the back, and you see the color tonal shifts, and you see the amount that she creates with certain gestures that are consistent, like you were talking about with jazz, there's a lot of complexity that's happening in each painting, and the gradations from painting to painting or from show to show really are large. And so throwing a number or text, you know, her calligraphy is her text. It's like saying to Cy Twombly, you really ought to put more numbers in there because the scribbles are not saying enough. This is the language she's using. And I don't know, I'm a friend of hers, so I you know, I want to say I'm a friend of hers, but I yeah. also think that as I look at her paintings, I'm often transported, because the final point I wanted to make was I have a hard time understanding where decoration ends and where, like, transcendent beauty begins. Mm-hmm. And this decorative concept can be very problematic and confusing to someone who, when they look at a piece of art, has a nice feeling about it.
Right.
And I thought if you could address that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I think you've addressed it for us, and we could and should address it. And if I was Melissa Meyer, I'd want you as a friend. So thank you for articulating what I good thoughts that I happen to agree with. Let's turn our last moments of attention to Michelle Lopez. Anybody have some thoughts or comments? Yes. A future review panelist, Anthony Hayden Guest.
I went to the Michelle Lopez show, and I walked in after about 90 seconds. I said, this stuff looks way too good. And when stuff made out of industrial materials and treated with brutalist techniques looks ravishingly elegant, you know that shock is departing for this particular part of the battlefield.
Anybody else like to comment on Lopez? And or shall we go out into the battlefield of this Friday night and see if Halloween has any shocks for us? Thank you very much, everybody. And and see you in a mere 3 weeks as our pre-Thanksgiving November 18th review panel.